The world needs ways to reduce carbon emissions.
We're working on solutions in our own operations.
Like carbon capture.
And clean energy from hydrogen.
So, who are we?
Believe it or not, ExxonMobil. And our solutions could help industries like manufacturing,
commercial transportation,
and power generation too.
Heavy industry with low emissions. Let's deliver.
Learn more at ExxonMobil.com.
The Texas PMP. Take a second to look and make it second nature. Check the PMP before prescribing opioids, benzodiazepines, barbiturates, or carisoprodol. Learn more at txpmp.org.
This is the Voice of America, Washington, D.C., signing on.
Santa's hell.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Contra, the podcast of AmericanPartisan.org and brought to you by BrushBeater.store. I have an incredible guest in here on the show. This is a guest who I've wanted to have on for a serious amount of time now since I started following him on Twitter. He followed me back almost immediately. You will recognize the name Jonathan Rawls of SurvivalRealty.com. He is the son of the legendary, the father of the modern survivalist movement, the prepper movement, James Wesley Rawls, a man that I've had podcast several times now. And Jonathan is absolutely no slouch in all of those regards, literally making this dream of a more prepared tomorrow, a better tomorrow for a lot of families happen all across the American readout and in a lot of other places. And Jonathan, it is great to have you on, brother.
It's great to be here and really appreciate the invite. So yeah, really looking forward to talking through how we can help people, how we can get people informed and get people equipped. So yeah, I'd love to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, right off the top, this is something I talked about with Clinton when I was on with Lieutenant Colonel Murray last night on the Patriots roundtable that we had. The band, just in general. I was just out in Kalispell, Montana, which is a really popular spot for a lot of people. There's a ton of military retirees up there. There's a lot of people that have relocated up there. It's one of those that Joel Skousen talked about in strategic relocation. You know, but when I was up there, I noticed a few things, and this same in a lot of places that you go, my particular area of North Carolina being included in that, you know, preppers, conservatives, you know, right-wing people, you know, people of our mindset are not the only ones, quote-unquote, strategically relocating.
Not at all.
And we have a lot of people that are not necessarily relocating for ideological reasons, but rather job reasons or simply, you know, they like the view. I like the view, you know, and they see a place that tax values are substantially lower and they go there and then of course they're going to drive them all up. And you know, Kalispell, Big Fork, Montana is definitely part and parcel of that. Jackson, Wyoming, Cody, Wyoming. You know, places I routinely go and teach classes. Colorado was kind of the classical example of that. North Carolina is becoming part and parcel of that as well. But talk us through, you know, the fact that prices on properties are definitely going up, but the trends that you see as a realtor, as someone who has built an incredible company based on that realty catering to our market, to our people, what's going on with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's two big factors here. One is the economy as a whole. One is the what you're getting for your dollar side of it. And the other side of it is what's happening locally with the areas that are in particularly high demand. So, I mean, to start with the entire real estate situation, it doesn't matter where you are. Prices have been going up consistently, aggressively over the past 10 plus years. You're coming out of the Great Recession. Interest rates got pulled down super low. And so you just saw, you know, huge flood of money coming into real estate. You could, you know, get something. If you could, you know, you can buy something at 2.5%, you know, you're making money versus inflation there. So you might as well buy as much as you can and take out the biggest loan you can afford. And with the low rates, you actually can't afford it. So we've had 10 years of all this money coming into real estate. So you've seen massive appreciation everywhere. This includes a lot of the areas now that are starting to hurt a bit, like the Bay, California's Bay Area, New York, everywhere else. So everywhere has seen, you know, massive appreciation. So nobody's lost value per se, but nationwide, I mean, dollars going down, you'd better get into real estate. It's just what it comes down to. So we're seeing that. That's a big part of it. And then you turn that around, crank up the interest rates, or, you know, start to crank them up as they are now. They're still relatively low compared to historical numbers, but they're the highest they've been for quite a while. And so that makes the whole affordability thing come into question no matter where you are. So even the areas that were incredibly cheap at one point are no longer, you know, there's not a screaming deal anywhere to be had. So that's one half of it. And then when we come,
that's one half of the story. No. Go ahead.
All right.
Segueling.
Yeah.
So you've got one half of the story right there.
Right.
Where do you see all the stuff go?
Yeah. So right now, I mean, I think there's potential that, you know, things can't necessarily go up forever unless the dollar keeps going down forever. So there's potential that reverses in some of the big markets like New York and California. And that starts pushing everybody back down. But the biggest thing we've got right now is the fact that people really are relocating particularly post 2020. This has been going on for, you know, years and years. The American readout movements, you know, over a decade old now. So there's been a lot of, and that's, you know, just one tiny slice of the overall trend of people relocating to places where they feel like the lifestyle's better. They feel like they are going to fit in better. They feel like they can raise their kids in a place they want their kids to grow up, in a culture they want their kids to grow up in. And then you've just got the actual people that are, you know, moving just for survival purposes to somewhere that they feel is more sustainable and secure. So all those factors together, I mean, we've seen big changes in property prices, particularly in some areas. So all along the Rockies, obviously Texas and Florida have been in the news significantly. There's some things I was sharing recently, New Hampshire, Maine, and Vermont have even seen their prices going up because of people heading out of New York and Boston area and looking just to get out of the city and get somewhere that's more sustainable.
As well they should. You know, we're seeing a lot of that. I would say my part of North Carolina, we're experiencing that. There's a lot of people that are coming down from the Northeast. And that's kind of been one of the trends since the mid-90s was, you know, back then around here, land was extremely cheap, you know, less than $1,000 an acre. And now, you know, it's average. It's about $4,000 an acre. You know, part of that owes to the devaluation of the dollar, as you were pointing out. But the other part of it is simply demand. And this is something that, you know, outside of the prepper world, you know, that we exist in, and, you know, we're kind of insiders on all that. But it has to do with the fact that a lot of people are realizing that you know, a lot of these places long term are unsustainable. And so they're looking for other options. The problem is, though, that I've run into, at least here in North Carolina, and this owes a lot to the tech industry, people coming here from Washington specifically. There's a lot of people, and I know this because the Washington license plate looks a whole lot like the North Carolina license plate. Red letters, white background, blue on the bottom. You know, the Washington license plate has the mountains on it, and the North Carolina license plate has either the Wright brothers airplane or you know, grass on it. You know, that's kind of what we've got going on, but they look very similar. And so those people are kind of looking for the same things, but they bring their politics with them, and that's led to a whole host of issues, and it's also leading to the political landscape changing completely. What does that look like for the readout areas? What does it look like for, like, you know, say Idaho and Montana and Wyoming in particular?
Yeah, so I'd say overall it's been a mixed bag. I mean, obviously preppers are a small fraction of the population, and we end up making some of the same moves that, you know, everyone else is making as well. So it is hard to really distinguish that. What you do see is that the people, it's a mix, but the people that tend to be moving towards areas, particularly the areas that are considered red states, backwards, flyover country, that does tend to some extent to gravitate people that are more conservative, do tend to gravitate towards those areas. It's really is a mix, though, particularly when you're looking, say, Texas and Florida. You have a lot of people going there just for business and because that's where, you know, society is happening, versus what is happening in the Bay Area at one point. So it's mixed. But one thing I really like sharing is a report that the Idaho Secretary of State put out, just looking at last year's new voter registrations in the state of Idaho. And when they did it, county by county, they broke it down. So new voters transferring their voter registrations from out of state into the state of Idaho based on where they came from. And you can look at Washington, Oregon, California, those voters moving into Idaho consistently in every county in Idaho were choosing to register Republican at a higher rate than the native Idahoans vote Republican. So that was something that felt like it was a confirmation that the messaging and the concept that's out there is actually having an impact. Whether it's people choosing not to move there because they have a stigma around the state and it being backwards and unprogressive, or people choosing to move there because they feel like it's actually a place that is still America. So you do see some of that. I think that does color it, but I think in a lot of places it's not necessarily making up for just the vast numbers that are moving in these rural areas. So it is a real challenge.
Yeah, it's, I kind of see it both ways. I mean, when I was just up in Big Fork and I was teaching a week-long class out there, and, you know, hung out with Jim from Northwest Liberty News. We did an awesome interview in studio, and I got to hang out a little bit of time, and a lot of these topics came up. And what was really ironic was where we were eating. We went out to lunch after, and where we were eating was right across from Ryan Zinke's office, which literally looks like a coffee kiosk. I mean, yeah, I heard you groan. You're like, oh, that guy. you know, his place looks like a coffee kiosk, and he is very much a product of, I'll say the California influence coming into that area. Yes. Specifically. You know, see, the sad thing is that, the first time that I ever traveled across the United States for a class was to Hamilton, Montana. That was actually before I decided to become a trainer full time, any of that stuff. And so I went out to Hamilton, which is just south of Missoula in Ravalli County, and absolutely loved that place. I mean, I was instantly at home.
Oh yeah, no, it's a great, fantastic place. I've been to wedding. Had a friend get married there a few years ago. He grew up there.
Oh yeah,
amazing, great people, super solid ranching community. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I know Hank Jr., he's got a ranch up there. And but I mean, I was instantly at home. It was one of those deals where you go into whatever the local diner is. And this is something I always tell people is whenever you're new to a place, look for the anchor point. And the anchor point typically is the Greasy Spoon, like, you know, wherever the locals are hanging out. And you can tell that in a rural area by, you know, where are the heavy duty trucks, like Super Duties and the Chevy 2500s and you know, the Dodges and stuff. Where are they? And wherever you find more than four or five of those in the parking lot, that's the anchor. That's where you get to go hang out with the good old boys. That's where they're going to be. And so when I walked into that place in Hamilton, the Log Cabin Diner, you know, Pancake House, I was instantly at home. I mean, it was, the culture is exactly the same, was exactly the same. I mean, these are people that were on the same wave. You know, the second time that I went to Hamilton, it was different. And it was, and literally it was only 6 months apart. I went out there in the spring. That was the first big class that I'd ever taught on the road. And then all of a sudden, because of that success, we scheduled another one going into the fall in September. And I go out there, and it was almost like this was back when Yellowstone was first getting big, which is completely over Hamilton, by the way. But it was like something had changed. And just in that brief moment in time, and I just noticed like who was coming in there, and I was only there for a few days, but I was noticing who was coming in there and who was kind of touristy and everything. And, you know, I was bouncing some of that off of the locals while I was there. I was like, hey, you know, this, everything seems to kind of have a different feel to it. And, you know, obviously I'm not from there. I got completely different, and, you know, and they all knew it instantly. But they were willing to talk to me, at least. And so there was some open hostility that I saw to people that had a different accent. And but they were willing to talk to me because I didn't seem like a threat. You know, I'm obviously not there. You know, I throw the Southern charm on them. I'm not there for, you know, I'm not trying to change the political landscape of your
right.
place. But it just seemed like everybody, all the way down to the waitress in this small diner, was in tune to it. And they were instantly just like, nope. But I was able to talk to them, and we were on the same wavelength of things.
Yeah.
And it was just very unfortunate. And they were like, you know, well, a lot of these people have come down from Missoula. And they had that, like, that when they said it, Missoula. You know, and I'm thinking Missoula, you know, when I was in the Army, all the guys that I worked with that had come from Montana, when they mentioned Missoula, you know, Missoula is just a little cowboy town, you know, and all of a sudden it just blew up into something that you know, it may have never have intended to be. And that has populated several other areas, unfortunately. For somebody who is
lost your audio.
that hurdle.
I lost you for a sec.
Okay. Yeah, connection looked like it bottomed out a little bit. But what advice do you have to people to overcome that hurdle of maybe some hostility from the locals? How to build rapport with them.
Yeah. So it depends on the area you're moving to. Some areas like the Inland Northwest, we're kind of at a point now where you expect that most people do not necessarily grow up there because the population has grown so dramatically over the last 20 years. So here it's almost more of a kind of broadly, become more broadly accepted that everyone came from somewhere and you try to fit in. Other areas, you get up to West Virginia, areas where you're at, where, there's not been a lot of change for the last 100 years. That's a whole nother deal. And I don't think you can simply, expect to just fit in those areas. That's going to be a long process. I think you're right on by going to find the local common points where you can really start to connect. I think, doing what you can to find ways to connect with people in the area, especially in a small town. So go to church, find ways to help out or to just start showing up to the local events. So if you're up for doing volunteer fire department, volunteer EMS, things like that, that's an awesome way to start building some level of trust in the community, where they see you as someone that's actually contributing. And then just culturally, be culturally sensitive, if you will, and don't try to change, don't try to change everything. Don't try to bring your expectations for what coffee should taste like or, what entertainment should look like, all those things. Try to actually fit in and appreciate what you're getting, where you go. One piece I do see, though, that kind of comes in this is, again, when those very conservative folks relocate, they're rightfully seeing the tendencies that took the places they were at and took them downhill. The progressive mindset, the anything goes mindset, the desire for cultural acceptance. And then you get to some of these small towns and you actually start to see some of those same tendencies at play in this, Mayberry-like setting, and that you still see the rainbow flags. You still see, this kind of desire to mimic what the big cities are doing, what California is doing. And so that's actually ends up being a point of conflict that I see with these new, very sensitized, individuals and families that are moving to these areas that have been in the midst of the culture war stuff. And then they get to a smaller community where, by and large, people don't want to hear about it. They want to get along, and they're actually, kind of going down the same road that California went down 50 years ago. And so, I think in local politics that really comes out. Culturally, sure, we can, civically, we can all get along, but I see that particularly flare up in local politics in a lot of areas where you get very active, motivated newcomers kind of going up against the establishment conservatives. Who don't necessarily see the same threats that the newcomers do. And that's something we're going to have to figure out how to navigate as this relocation continues.
That's an incredibly valid point. And, dovetailing, I think that's one of the big hurdles is that when people leave from one area and they migrate into another, you run into kind of I don't want to use this term, but there's really no other way to put it. It's the prepper evangelist. They show up place, they think that it's the promised land all of a sudden. And, they're like, hey, doesn't everybody do these things? Like, all of the stuff. Hey, don't. Why do all this stuff? It's like, settle down a little bit. I get this feedback a lot with people getting into amateur radio, ham radio, amateur radio is a great prepping hobby
yes.
to get into. There's a ton of practical application, but it is a hobby. And a lot of people get into it. And I'll get this email at least once a week from people who say, you know, I went to local ham radio club meeting and they kind of gave me the cold shoulder, you know, and now I know what you mean by sad hams. And it's like, yeah, but maybe you came on a little too strong too.
Right.
You know, you can dial some things back. Understand what you're there for.
Yeah.
It's a hobby. But when we apply that logic to strategically relocating, getting to a new place, right? Relocating your whole lifestyle, literally like, you know, the Grays in Patriots. You know, they bought their place in Idaho. They strategically yep. relocated from Chicago. And, you know, the millions of people that have read that story that your dad wrote that really launched the entire prepping universe of all the right. things. I mean, he literally did. People quickly get overwhelmed with a lot of that stuff, and they can overwhelm the local conversation as well, and a lot of times that can lead to
not all engine oils are created equal. John Deere proprietary oil blends are made for your machine to protect it from whatever comes your way. Choose the oil that was made for it. Find it at your local dealer or online at johndeere.com/oils.
Del Wamsley and the Wealth Cycle.
This is the wealth cycle that I've taught for 30 years. Buy one house, 10 houses, an apartment, two apartments, 8, 20, 500 units, 1,000 units, 2,000, 5,000 units. And as you keep putting the money and the profits back in, you become one of those rich people. And much quicker than you'd even believe.
Learn Del's Wealth Cycle at GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Use promo code 2024. Save 60%. Code 2024. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.
You know, hey, you're coming off kind of as a weirdo, you yeah. know, if that makes sense. And a good example that I throw in there is, you know, in Utah with the Mormon culture, mm-hmm. you know, the predominant Mormon culture have a year's worth of food put back, you know, and why did they do that? It's because of, in case of crop failures. You know, and prepping, as we term it, was really a mechanism of cultural survival. And you know, the Mormon example is a really strong one. You know, but Amish culture, again, like even my grandparents, you know, growing up in the Great Depression, everybody had a farm around here. Everybody had a farm. And everybody canned food. Everybody grew something. And I mean, I'm talking even people that lived in urban areas. Mm-hmm. They still had a garden of some kind, or they had chickens, or they had something, you know, small animals that they raised, because that's all part of it, you know, and you had your harvest, and you know, and at some point, you know, going into the 1970s, 1980s, a lot of that began to drop off with certain cultures, you know, certain subsets of culture here in the United States. It is a breath of fresh air. I want to throw in there, it's a breath of fresh air that is coming back. It's coming back into vogue in a very big way. But I guess where I'm going with that is when people come on too strong, you know, what are your observations on that? As somebody who grew up in the readout, who is, you know, had the 10,000 foot view on all of this, and now has a whole industry based around this, you know, what are you seeing?
Yeah, no, I think that's really good. I think, yes. Yeah. So I get, you know, media inquiries here and there from, you know, people that want to come in and, you know, do some report on the American readout, say, and, you know, they want to meet with the leaders. And then you just have to say, well, you know, there's not a leader. This is just people that are a lot of individuals, a lot of families. You know, you can maybe say, that there's a few churches perhaps, or a few social groups that kind of, you know, lean into that a little bit. But, you know, there's, it's with this pretty much anywhere, you know, there's not somewhere to go. You don't sign up somewhere. It's just a matter of, you know, seeing the broader pattern and then choosing to structure your life in a way that actually makes sense, not something you sign up for. So, yeah, I think it's really important to realize, you know, particularly when you're moving to a smaller community out of, you know, the big city, for particularly those people to realize that, you know, you are, yeah, the culture war is still going on. Yeah, we've still got everything, you know, all the things that you're probably excited about are probably largely irrelevant to most of the people where you're going. Obviously, people still, you know, watch the news. They still, you know, care about it. But it's not as pressing for a lot of these people in the same way. And like you said, it can definitely turn people off when you come in and start saying, okay, we need to, you know, put together a militia to, you know, stave off the black helicopters. People start looking at you a little weird. And, you know, they're like, well, yeah, we've got that guy and he lives down the road and he's worried about the black helicopters. But it's not like, you know, everyone's part of his militia. So there's a sense in which rural areas tend to, I actually think that rural areas tend to attract a lot more diversity of viewpoints than cities do. You get a lot of people with a lot of different outlooks. You know, they say cities are diverse and multicultural, but actually I find that rural areas tend to attract more a broader range of outlooks, broader range of personalities, and you kind of have to learn to work with those people and accept people kind of for where they are. A lot of them are, you know, they retired up there because they like bird watching. They want to be close to the ski mountain. Some of them are, you know, some of them grew up there. Some of them are, you know, hardcore preppers. You've got, you know, a little bit of everything. And then you just like get the hippie back to the lander guys. And then all of you get thrown together in a, you know, small town or just a rural neighborhood. You all live on down one rural road. And you kind of have to make sense of how to make, you know, a society work amongst yourselves. And you're not likely to get everyone on board if you lean too hard into one particular format, or you want to try to get everyone on your program. Particularly people that want to live out tend to be very suspicious of programs to start with. So,
welcome. Let's play pick a door. Door one or two?
Door one?
You picked flood insurance. Gary, tell them what they won.
You win. Faster recovery from flooding, financial protection, and peace of mind. This hurricane season, bounce back from flood loss. Flood insurance is your winning choice. FloodSmart.gov/hurricanes.
Absolutely. You know, they end up running afoul of the good old boy network that looks at it like, we've always lived like this. You know, this is just how we've always done. You know, it's, I don't need to prepare for the apocalypse. Is, you know, it's getting to the next growing season.
Exactly.
You know, for good and bad though, for good and bad, because there's a lot of, to use the internet term, there's a lot of FUDism that gets embedded into that point of view, and a lot of myopic, you know, well, we don't really need to worry about that because it's like, maybe you do need to worry about it. I mean, we have an X-class solar flare coming to our part of the world right now, which will cause, could cause all sorts of problems. You know, probably far worse than the Carrington event. And during the Carrington event, you know, we didn't just as an example, we didn't really have the reliable technology that we have now, even though the Carrington event was, you know, pretty epic, but it still also happened in the 1890s where, you know, if the worst thing that happens is telegraph lines get burned up, well, hey, that sucks, but you know, the impact would be far more deadly these days, or a lot more self-sufficient, you know? And so when you point those kinds of things out, some people are like, okay, well, all I really want to do is raise cows. Mm. I don't really care about all that, you know, and they run into that. What I've found, at least when people will reach out to me with their various frustrations, you know, because when you become a public figure, and I'm sure you've experienced this, you become kind of the dumping ground for people, you know, they just, you love, I mean, God bless them. Yeah. And you hear their frustration. You're like, all right. But, you know, they got to vent to somebody. It's fine. But at the same time, it's like, hey, you know, you got to realize that you're bearing the weight of Atlas on your shoulders, and you don't necessarily need to. Like, just worry. You will build a community around you. All you have to do is just be normal about it. You know, and I think that, you know, your advice on getting involved in the church, first and foremost, this is, coincides exactly with what I've said over the years, volunteer fire department, because you're also going to learn with a volunteer fire department, you're also going to learn who the bad actors are, you know, because I was having this conversation with a close friend of mine earlier today that is a practicing, and you know, as we were waiting on a donkey to get delivered for coyote defense for calves, you know, you don't deal with the best sectors in society when you are a emergency responder. You know, you're dealing with all of the bad people. They call you because they're having a good day. They're calling you because they're having their worst day. And exactly. Yeah, the conversation drifted into in a couple of directions, but it drifted into how burned out and how quickly burned out you get. But it's valuable to be involved in that because you're now plugged into the community that is most plugged in your community. You know, you're part of that subset of the emergency responders who know, okay, this guy over here and his eight kids and, you know, whatever their
When it comes to mining, ASCO is on it with Hitachi to deliver the goods. The ASCO equipment mining product lineup includes the latest in Hitachi heavy-duty excavators, haul trucks, and shovels with second-to-none hydraulic systems that are ready to go to work. With 25 locations in Texas, Oklahoma, and New Mexico, convenience is key. Hitachi Mining Performance. ASCO Support. Achieve more. Find the location closest to you at ascoeq.com.
You know, things of that nature. And so you get looked at as a solver of problems at that point rather than a detriment to the community. You share in that viewpoint. Do you have anything that you'd want to add?
Yeah, I think that's really good. I think it's something you really have to take your time at. I think a lot of this people feel like they're, you know, feeling like they're, you know, behind the times, trying to get caught up quickly. And, you know, part of that's just, you know, trusting Providence and, you know, the time that we have is the time we have, and we've got to work from where we are. We can't, you know, go back and, you know, do it 10 years ago. We got to do it now and, you know, look the 10 years forward. And I do think that's an important part of, you know, where you choose to relocate is find a place that's going to be somewhere you think you can, you know, actually connect and fit in and find a community and, you know, where that's actually going to work for you. If you're, you know, very Yankee, moving down the South might be challenging. And, you know, I think that's going to be extra challenge to overcome. So just, you can just go to Maine. That's fine. and likewise, you know, Californians versus, you know, Washingtonians, Nevadans, you know, everyone's got a slightly different culture. And there really is something to kind of go in where you're going to have a cultural fit as well as, you know, kind of choosing the ideal location, but it's really an ideal location for you. And I think that does help.
For sure. In your estimation, where is the place right now? Where what is the hot commodity? What is the place that, you know, everybody's after? And in your estimation, where is the best place? If, you know, let's say I'm someone of means living in, you know, the Bay Area of San Francisco. And I, you know, I'm tired of snap crap and, you know, all of the shenanigans that are going on there. I'm ready to get out. Where should I go? Where is that market?
Yeah. So I think a lot of that does depend, like we talked about at the beginning, on property prices and affordability. So where you're coming from, if you're selling a house somewhere, trying to find somewhere where your money's going to go further rather than go a lot shorter is pretty important. So folks that are moving from the Midwest out to the Rockies are going to have a really hard time. They're going from a relatively low property value area to a high property value area, and they're going to have a hard time, you know, getting that to work for them. So where you're coming from, what your financial situation looks like does really play into that and how far your money goes. So I'm obviously still very much pro inland Northwest, for the sake of politics, for the sake of climate livability. I mean, people just do like the four season climate with a low humidity, decent rainfall, good hunting, fishing, and outdoor life. There are a lot of advantages there, but like we've discussed, that area, because of the demand from preppers and from everybody else, prices have gone up really dramatically. It's still more affordable than California and Washington, but it's, you know, one of the more expensive areas in the U.S. even now, compared to most states. So I'm at a point where I'm cautioning people who are seriously considering moving to particularly northern Idaho and western Montana, that entire area has gotten very expensive, and it can be really discouraging for folks that are moving up here now, kind of expecting to find something on 40 acres, which you really can't do for under, you know, multiple million dollars. That gets better if you go down towards central Idaho, central Montana, eastern Montana, of course. You can absolutely find that in Wyoming as well. There's a lot more options there. It's just the areas that are slightly less desirable because they're not near those small metro areas that have really gone through a boom in the past few years. So if you're willing to go fairly rural and remote, the Salmon River country of Idaho is fantastic if you really want to get remote. Likewise, some of the areas out towards Helena, Montana, just on the other side of the Rockies, those areas tend to be slightly more affordable, relative to the big cities of the American Redoubt, and a little more attainable. But for a lot of folks that are looking for, you know, something that's where prices haven't already climbed to the moon and back, I see a lot of people looking at the South, looking at the Midwest, and looking at Arkansas, Missouri, Oklahoma, and Eastern Texas, just because those areas they've had major price increases as well. But the average prices are still relatively low. You can actually get a house on a little bit of land and not spend, you know, millions of dollars on it. And for a lot of people, that's what's realistic. And I'm big on saying, you know, everything's unaffordable now. I mean, the news tells you that all the time. And I think it's important to say, you know, you'd be better off choosing something that is not necessarily the ideal property, maybe not be as much acreage as you want, may not be the location you want. But if you can actually afford to live there, you have to survive financially first before you can survive anything else. And if you're getting foreclosed on, you're in a tough spot. And I don't think that you should say if there's an economic collapse, there's two ways that plays out. One is it takes a couple of years, you lose your job, you lose your house, and then the rest of the collapse happens. It doesn't necessarily happen all at once. No one expects you to pay your mortgage.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. You know, who is going to come collect on it? You know, that's kind of a pivotal question there.
Yep.
I mean, you know, I'm not by the way, we're not advocating anybody go out there, rack up a whole bunch of debt, and then,
absolutely,
you know, not plan on paying it off, because,
yeah,
you know, that is a good segue into my next question, though. You know, the finance side of real estate, what are you seeing with the interest rates? Because there's been some fluctuations there that I think have been very interesting. Where is this headed long term? Because I asked this really for you know, obviously for the listeners, but it's kind of my own fascination that we're headed towards, you know, another 2006, 2007 type market that led into 2008 and the yep, you know, the Great Recession with all of that. It seems like we've literally done that again. And you know, it's a game of musical chairs with the finance sector and particularly with housing. This is a bubble to go along with student debt, which the student debt bubble is still very much there, folks. Still very much there. It's there are so many caveats to the quote unquote bailout plan, which is well, I don't know. I don't even want to get into that topic, but with the housing sector, because this is a giant bubble, I think that has been partly artificially inflated. Part of it's been natural. Where do you see this going?
Yeah, it's a really challenging one. I think a lot of people are feeling that same thing. I'm particularly looking at the Fed, and they're just, I mean, I'd say lies as far as, you know, what their agenda is. What their intentions are, just as far as interest rates go, people's predictions as far as the real estate market for this year are fluctuating every time the Fed changes direction on which way they're taking interest rates. So you've got that question, just what are interest rates going to do? If interest rates stay high and don't come back down, prices are going to have to correct at some point, just because people literally cannot afford to buy houses in a lot of places all over the U.S., and there's no way that that's sustainable in the long run. You know, maybe that pushes everyone into rentals. You know, I hate what's going on with the economy overall, the manipulation that's going on there. And I mean, I see it daily, just because people send us emails saying, hey, why is everything so expensive? And I have to say, well, I don't set the prices. And we can't do anything about that part of it. No. We can just show you what's out there. So I do feel like we are in a situation where the housing market's been very heavily manipulated, has been heavily manipulated for obviously many years. So I think we're not in a situation where someone can look at it just from purely economic terms and make a really valid prediction about what the market's going to do, because so much of it depends on external manipulation, unfortunately.
Yeah. Oh, I agree 1,000% on that. It's going to be hard to predict. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine that's a realtor probably a year ago on, you know, and it had nothing to do with, you know, prepping topics or any of that, even though she's very much into that. But we were having a conversation about property values and just in general how they are spiking. Very similar conversation that you and I are having right now. But it was basically just North Carolina markets and just, you know, how a lot of it's being artificially inflated. And her assertion of the situation is that it is a bubble and it is going to pop. The problem is that we don't know. We have absolutely no way of predicting where that's going to occur. And that, you know, the banks and American society in general learned some things, unfortunately, about passing the buck along in the post 2008 economy, and that they could, in theory, at least artificially inflate this thing going forward. But the problem is, to dovetail that, the problem is, the downside to this is that property values are just going to continue to inflate and inflate and inflate to levels that are unobtainium. And at that point, that is when it is going to pop.
Yes.
And at some point, the banks are going to say, we can't loan this amount of money for a multitude of reasons.
Yep.
And at that point, that's when the dam is going to break, so to speak.
Yeah, and without corresponding increase in wages in all these areas, there's just not going to be sustainable in the long run. People say, well, BlackRock and everyone just want to be the landlords to everybody and have everybody rent. But again, if you're paying whatever interest rate you're paying, that has to get passed on to the renter. So the affordability has to change at some point. But that doesn't mean that we can't go through a lot of hurt first.
Yeah, 100%.
So,
and
yeah,
here's the thing too. Well, no, go ahead.
Oh yeah, no, I was gonna say. That's where I feel very conflicted. You know, people ask for, you know, well, what should we do? Just because we don't know. There's on one hand, there's buy this year because things could be even less affordable next year. Or there could be, you know, next year things could drop significantly if we really do have a market shift. And it's extremely hard to predict that. I think in large part, it's look for the right place for yourself and your family, get yourself situated in a place you can afford and works for you. And when the market's being manipulated, trying to time the market becomes really challenging. So it comes down to you finding the right place. When you find the right place, just go ahead and go for it and hope it works out.
It's talking about timing the market. You know, I think there were a ton of people that saw 2008 coming.
Yeah.
And the thing was that they knew it was coming. It's like a hurricane. Mm. You know, it's coming. You know, it's going to be bad. You've had weeks to prepare for it because they move slow, but you don't know exactly where they're going to make landfall.
Mm.
You know, and of course, it's a kind of an East Coast phenomenon. Although I know California got their one hurricane that they've ever had in the history of California. You know, and they were all freaking out, and then they just got a bunch of rain. You know, it's like, that's every fall for us. Oh, yay. Yep. But, you know, the thing is that predicting economic catastrophe and, you know, the economic crisis of 2008 that was largely driven by the housing bubble, and we're getting to that market again. And yes, there's a lot of ancillary things that have been driving that artificial inflation.
Hmm.
Nobody can predict exactly when this is going to happen.
No.
You know, so what advice would you have as somebody that has the eagle eye view on all of this, the macro level view on all this? What advice do you have for the person who is, let's say, the hypothetical person that's trapped behind lines and, you know, the Silicon Valley or, you know, the Tacoma area of Washington where they desperately want to get out? You know, very good people and you know, but I don't know if we can swing it financially right now, but we want to, and we're waiting for a market correction. But like a lot of people who invest in, you know, Wall Street, for example, they wait for a minor correction and then they're going in, you know, and that's a buying opportunity. And that could certainly be true of the real estate market as well. I think personally it will be in the near future. What advice do you have for them to keep them kind of on the straight and narrow and in the best position possible?
Yeah. So I think part of that is just trying to figure out, you know, you've got a range of scenarios you got to, you know, plan for. You know, you've got just the ongoing slow disintegration that we're seeing with the occasional flare-ups as we have, you know, large-scale social unrest like we've had with 2020, and we may expect to see that again this year. So we see that, and you have to be considerate of that. But then you've also got the potential, you know, for things to change, the situation change rapidly if there really is a situation where the Fed starts to lose control of their management of, you know, the managed decline, and they go into a rapid uncontrolled decline, where you do want to have a backup plan to think it through. And part of that's realizing, you know, realizing our limitations, realizing the role of providence in that, that we may not be in a situation where we can have the property. So for myself, for my own immediate family, we're in that situation. We bought in the suburbs in a good red state. We feel good about that 6 years ago, but we're stuck in the same affordability trap as far as being able to locate further out of town to get onto our own acreage. We've got the family ranch as our fallback retreat. And, you know, that gives us assurance that we're not in an ideal location at the moment. We want to get to a better location, but we have an option to fall back to. So I think that's something that you really have to work through is you may not be able to be getting the best location, but you can come up with alternatives. You know, ideally that's with family or friends, or just having a fallback plan for what you're going to do in a range of different scenarios. And ultimately that does, again, come out in a trust and providence that you can do the best you can and you have to leave the rest. So I think just keeping your, yeah.
Yeah. One last question is, we're coming up on the hour. And this is something that I reflected last night again with Colonel Murray and Clay Martin and Trooper in there on the Roundtable podcast, was that something that I'm seeing locally is a lot of younger folks. You know, I am a millennial, and you know, as I am approaching 40 years old, I'm squarely in the millennial generation, but I'm seeing a lot of the younger millennials and Generation Z in particular who are banding together in kind of a co-op model to go in and buy land in rural areas. And some of that is political motivation to do so. Some of it is just kind of a reflection of, things are prohibitively expensive now. And so if we kind of pool our money and get together in this co-op model, that's going to work out a little bit better. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, I would say, yes, I am. I think it's still, still not necessarily widespread. I think I see a lot of families particularly, but also, yeah, friend groups, social groups starting to largely try to, you know, buy and develop land together, particularly because it's hard to find either existing homes or buildable land that's attainable. And working together to do that, I think, can be very helpful. I think that's a really good strategy. I have reservations as far as, you know, doing the commune approach, just because that's been tried so many times and tends to lead to a lot of challenges, because you're very much at the mercy of everyone else's personality, work ethic, and trustworthiness. So I'm hesitant to, you know, strongly recommend those sort of solutions outside of family, just because of that. But I mean, I've also said that feudalism might have to make a comeback. So.
Well, I mean, it, and that could be an incredible conversation in and to itself. Is we're approaching a time where I think the landed nobility and kind of the culmination of landed nobility with sharecroppers. You know, we think of sharecroppers and kind of the landowner is, you know, grapes of wrath and a very negative connotation, and there are a lot of that, obviously deservedly so, that goes along with it, but that doesn't reflect the reality and the societal reality that, you know, landlords are a thing, and that is very much coming back. That we're headed in that direction. I share that sentiment, having seen a lot of groups of friends with the Good Idea Fairy. Hey, you know, we'll just band together and we'll go buy some property. Just as you pointed out, you know, you get that one friend that the work ethic ain't quite there. And, you know, all of a sudden, you know, well, now I want my little chunk of land, or maybe I want to cash out. And then that turns into a legal fight among all interested parties. And it just never quite pans out. But it is an interesting phenomenon nonetheless. And I was just wondering if, you know, y'all had kind of seen the same thing that I'm seeing out here in that regard. So it's kind of fascinating. But Jonathan Rawls, brother, how can people find you?
Yeah, absolutely. So survivalrealty.com is our main platform. We've got all our property listings. We work with agents and property owners that advertise their listing with us. So we're not a brokerage, but we've got a marketplace for off-grid, remote, rural properties nationwide and worldwide. So survivalrealty.com. Then we've got email newsletter. If you hit the site, you can sign up for the newsletter. We've got a couple PDF guides we can get out to you. And then you can get regular updates. Survival Realty is on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm on Twitter at Jonathan Rawls. Those would be great platforms to connect. I'm always glad to answer questions, help where I can. You know, I can't necessarily solve. There's a lot of problems out there. We can't solve them all, but if there's a way I can help or assist anywhere, I'm glad to do that. So, yeah, absolutely.
Amen, brother. Jonathan Rawls of survivalrealty.com. Pay him a visit if you were looking to strategically relocate, and everybody absolutely should. If you're living in a blue hive, you really need to be looking at getting out. And I'm going to tell y'all, we're headed into another summer of love. However well protected, insulated you think you are, it ain't enough. I've got plenty of stories about how this will come to a rural town, and you need to get yourself very well prepared. Thank you so much, brother, for being on, and I'm honored to have you, and I look forward to getting you on the air again here real, real soon.
Would love to. Thank you so much.
God bless. Everybody, take care. Be safe, and I will talk to you again very, very soon. Brushbeater.store, Night Vision, freeze-dried food, thermals, communications needs, and a heck of a lot else all over there. Pay us a visit. I'll talk to you again very, very soon. NC Scout out.
Smoothie King's new lemonade lineup is here.
Lemonade, lemonade, the Smoothie King way.
Try a strawberry guava lemonade SK refresher.
Over ice.
A power up in a cup.
Energize.
Or a blueberry lemonade smoothie.
Blend it up in your cup.
Made with real fruit, real juice for a real sipping good summer.
Yum, yum, gotta get some.
Smoothie King's new lemonade lineup, all for a limited time.
Who's thirsty?
Lifestyles Unlimited wants you real estate retired. Learn the roadmap to wealth building. Impact your family for generations.
Our kids are actually involved, and so they're learning the ropes. They see this in their future. It's benefited our children in the way they think of their future. It's taught them how to think in the millions.
Learn from the best. Lifestyles Unlimited. Now's the time to take action. Go to GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. Enter code 2024 for a $297 two-year membership. GiveMeTotalFreedom.com. That's GiveMeTotalFreedom.com.